You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Neil Williams, and welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show. Today, we have a guest. Sherrod Ellis is with us, the mad scientist. Sherrod, how are you, man?
Hey, so far so good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Bruce is not with us today, but so Sherrod and I are going to cover the topics and hang out with you guys for a bit. Today, we're going to talk about constructing your life or determining your own direction. Sherrod, oh, now you're on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfect.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Look at that, out of nowhere. Let me guess. Did someone by the name of Devin have something to do with this?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the younger generation, man. Without them, we'd be lost with technology.
Yes, we would.
But I was telling one of my guys the other day, he's had a cell phone since he was, I think he said, 8. And I don't even think cell phones came out until I was in high school. I didn't have a cell phone until I was like almost an adult. But these kids running around with cell phones, iPads. Mm-hmm. Heck, if you don't have an iPad, I don't even know if you can connect to your classroom and stuff. We've gone to all virtual.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm laughing because I can see you moving your waving your arms.
Yeah, Devin. Yeah, thanking him for this.
That's funny. Well, hey, Sherrod, so let's talk about constructing your life, determining your own direction. I wrote down a ton of key points, so really we'll just work through it, have some topic discussion about it, and see where it goes from there.
Absolutely.
I had a conversation with one of my guys yesterday, and one of the questions I asked him was, is your life the life of your choosing? Meaning, are you choosing to fulfill someone else's expectations for your life, or are you living a life that's truly your own? What kind of experience do you
have? Yeah, I think that's a big one, Mr. Neil, is a lot of the young men that I work with, I think they feel like they're not living their own life, like they're not allowed to. We got to go with whatever the family tradition is. You know, family likes to go to school, you know, doctor, dad's a doctor, mom's a doctor. So they feel like they're following those footsteps. And it's like, I'm not living my own life. So that is a challenge.
Yeah, it's almost like you've been issued an identity. Like, here you go. This is who you're going to be. This is where you're going to go. And you don't have to like it, but you do have to do it. And I think that's, there's like a, it almost feels like, feel like, but I think that can feel like you, something that everyone should have the freedom to choose. You know, that's really what makes us who we are, is the freedom of choice. And what is it? You remember Viktor Frankl?
Yeah.
He talks about that. The only thing that they couldn't take from him when he was a prisoner of war or prisoner of the Holocaust was his freedom of thought, you know, his belief. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much all you have.
Yeah, and I use him a lot as an example, because that was very powerful with how he did that. You know, meaning, you know, you got to create your own meaning of your own life.
Yeah, and not only did he do it, but under the circumstances.
Yes,
I mean, but that also says a lot about the power of the mind. Mm-hmm. If you can truly experience that kind of physical, mental, and emotional impression and still make the decision to have meaning and believe in that, it says a lot about the power of your mind.
It does. Yeah.
The second point, or second question, if you will, is, are you pursuing your natural gifts? Meaning, are you trying to become good at something that you're not passionate about? Or are you choosing to pursue something that seems naturally gifted for you, like something that you're supposed to be doing? Or are you trying to force something? Which I think could be good or bad. You know, I don't think you necessarily have to do what you're naturally good at. I think you could kind of choose. Well, so that's a good question. Are you, so for you, Sherrod, are you, what you're doing with your life, you know, your career path and what you do, what you're pursuing with your life, was that something that you were always naturally good at, or is that something that you kind of had to train yourself to understand and think through?
That's a good question. I think my grandmother, my grandfather, I believe that I actually gravitate. I was always taught the value is better to give than to receive. So I'm actually living out, you know, my dreams and my goals of helping others and just being a resource for people, being a voice, being the eyes for the blind, ears for the people that are deaf, voice for the ones that can't speak.
Of St. Francis every morning. And that's one of my favorite things about it, is it talks about forgiving rather than looking to be forgiven, and looking to love rather than feel love. And it's basically just teaching you to think in terms of what can I contribute rather than what can I get out of it. I'm sorry, Ronan said something to me real fast. I'm trying to see what it said. Yes, I can turn my speakers down. So I do. I really like what you said about that. In addition, I think if we were all able to find what it is we're good at and find a way to use that to contribute back to society, mm-hmm. we'd be in a totally different place, you know, because ever since, at least in my experience, ever since I've really been seeking a way to use what I have to give back, things just have been more fulfilling. And it seems like the path just gets a little bit smoother when you approach it that way. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And like you say, when you pour into someone and you see the results of someone waking up and connecting, that's a beautiful sight, man.
Yeah, and it's do far more when you're giving rather than waiting to receive. Mm-hmm. It's just an interesting thing how it works. The next one is, what is your motivation for the path you have chosen? So being where we live in America and in the time that we live in this country, it is very common for the motivation to do things to be money driven, you know, the payout, and what are the perks? What are the benefits, like vacation time, traveling, being around celebrities? You know, if you work in TV or radio, you get to be around famous people, you get to be around celebrities. If you work in sales, you get to travel, which was awesome. I did that for some sales guys, and that was fun. But there also came a point in time to where I was sacrificing time with the people I loved, and I wasn't able to invest in my personal life. And so I found that the things that I was enjoying about that kind of work were not really the things that were going to make me happy and that were going to make my life fulfilling. So I think it's real important for us to think about what's the motive, like what's our motivation? Are we doing something for the perks and the pay, or are we doing something because of what it actually does for the world and what it does for our heart? Have you ever been in a job where it was just to get paid?
Yeah, absolutely. And in those type of positions and those roles, man, I was miserable. Because like you say, you know, I did factory work. I played semi-pro football. I mean, it's fun in the moment, but it's like when you finish, it's like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
You know, now what do I do? Now what? I mean, am I really doing this because it's satisfying me, and how is it benefiting others? But when I did get into the profession of psychology and counseling and this field here, dealing with the mental health and addiction, man, it's now I feel the value of it, because now it's shifted from, it's not really about money. It's about, you know, seeing you turn your life around.
Yeah. There's a lot more to that.
Yeah, man. And that's a heck of a connection, man, when you can connect to your soul and you can see somebody that's in the dark and lost and doesn't have any answers and just ready to end it all. Say, I love you. Or, hey, young lady, I love you, and I think you're worth the investment. Let's talk about it. And seeing that person click and register and say, okay, I'll be willing to talk. Man, that's a beautiful sight.
Yeah, well, and something you just said really hit me hard. I'm not sure why. I'm going to have to think about this later and do some self-reflection. Because something you just said actually made me feel a little bit emotional. You said, connect to your soul. And right when you said that, it really resonated with me, because I'm realizing that this is what's fun about this topic is now, just when you said that, I'm realizing that through our line of work, we actually connect to our own soul. And to be able to do that through your, I mean, basically it's your 9 to 5, you know, you're going so you can pay bills, you're going because you have to work, but to be able to connect to your own soul. And the reason that's such a heavy, impactful statement to me is because I lived a lot of my life feeling very disconnected from myself. I felt like I was living outside of myself, not knowing who I was, not knowing what I was here for, and not knowing, I really felt like I wasn't supposed to be here. I really felt like I was accidentally placed here. And God had, if he was there, had made a mistake. It's like, you have the wrong guy. I'm in the wrong body. I'm in the wrong spot. Let's ejecto cito, get me out. Mm-hmm. And now to be where we are now, doing what we do and working with these people and feeling very connected and in sync with that positive energy is, it's a hell of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Let me ask you this, though. When you were playing football, were you doing it because you loved the game, or were you doing it because you were trying to make it to the league, or was it a combination of both, or was it something else?
No, I think it was just a self-fulfilling prophecy of just, yeah, I always did want to play in the NFL, but I detoured and made some decisions that took me down a different path. And then I'll be honest with you, I had fun. I do love the game, but what I had to come to realize is that I'm doing what I wanted to do in the NFL, and that was having a platform to be able to help others. And I didn't realize that at the time, but now that I look back, you know, over the years and tears, I say, well, man, all I wanted to do anyway was use that platform to help others. So it was like, wow, okay, I did get the benefit of playing semi-pro ball down in Kansas City. Got to meet a lot of the Chiefs players and work out with them, you know, during those times, but ultimately, man, I'm happy because I knew that this is where I'm truly supposed to be. And the platform is real beautiful. It's not as large as if I was in the NFL, but it's a beautiful platform, you know, because you get to meet guys like yourself.
Yeah, well, and that can still change. You know, your platform is only as big as it is right now, but, you know, things can change. Look at that guy who, I forget his name already, Aldaka, or it's the guy who was skateboarding, drinking that Ocean Spray cranberry juice. Like, I mean, overnight, his platform went from that to what it is now. And I mean, that dude literally overnight, all from a video of skateboarding on the way to work. Mm-hmm. And now he's like sending out these positive messages that millions of people are seeing every day. That's pretty nuts.
That is.
So, I mean, you never know. You never know. And plus, we're starting something new, and who knows what can happen with that, the people we can meet and the lives we can touch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the beauty, Mr. Neil, of being where we've been. You know, we've been in that dark hole. We've been in that place where we couldn't see any type of light. And so the beautiful thing is when you've been through that storm and you've weathered it, man, to connect to these individuals and to open the light for them and allow them to see things and hear things the way that they've never seen or heard them before and receive things from a different place, man, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's that additional perspective. You know, when someone is there, something about going through trials and tribulations like that, when you come out on the other side and come out stronger, you have this new perspective, and it's like it's a totally different way of perceiving things that you never thought existed before. You know, for me to sit here, and something I read this morning in my devotional. So when I see concerning business, when you lose a client or a customer or whatever you want to call it, when you lose someone, that's a challenge, right? Okay, well, how am I going to regain that business? How am I going to make sure that these financial needs are met? Whereas then I read this devotional this morning, and it's sitting there and it says, and it's God, they're talking about God. It's talking about he is the ultimate provider, and that we have no comprehension of the level in which he can bless us. And so immediately what I was seeing as a real problem has now changed in the middle of the day to actually, this is just another opportunity for God to come in and do what God does and for him to show his power and for me to exercise my faith and play my role. And I need to do what I do and stay faithful and take those steps and just handle my business. And that type of perspective was unknown. I couldn't have even just said what I just said to you. And it wouldn't have made any sense if you had said it to me, you know, some years ago. So it's, I like that. I like that we're able to be that voice of reason. Whereas we were in a place where we couldn't hear our own voice at times, you know. What's next? Are you spending your life pursuing something simply because you're good at it? Just because you're good at something does not mean that it is your purpose or what you are meant to do forever.
Yeah, that's a very good one. That's a good one there.
And that was if you were playing ball because you wanted to, because you loved it. So I think a lot of people stick to sports because they're good at it. You know, you look at those naturally gifted athletes, Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah.
Josh Gordon. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who are simply doing what they do because they're freakishly talented.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but where are they at in here? Where are they at right here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, those are just three names off the top of my head.
Yeah.
You know, and those are because of the stories were so big, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Antonio Brown, that for the listeners who don't know who these folks are, Aaron Hernandez was a receiver for the New England Patriots who was convicted of murder and then took his own life. Josh Gordon couldn't stick to the substance abuse policy of the league, so he kept getting suspended and kind of out doing his thing. And then Antonio Brown, who clearly has some mental health issues, and people just, I don't know. That one's a complicated one. Because
mm-hmm.
for people to not like address it and someone to not say, hey, he really shouldn't even be thinking about football. We need to figure out how to get this man some help.
Right.
Like, that should be the real conversation. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's clearly, you can see with how his reactions are to things and the way he's bizarre in his behavior and, you know, classic mental health situation, you know. And but like you say, when people focus on your talents and what you can do for me, you know, that's the unfortunate thing about in that arena right there. And even on a smaller scale, sometimes people exploit you and expose you. Hey, I know that you're good at this, but I know you don't know what you're doing with it. So here's what I'm going to do because it benefits me. And sometimes used in that fashion and to the person, you know, it presents itself like, hey, that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. and my gift and things like that, the talent that I have, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And because they may love it or they may think they love it, you know, they allow themselves to continue to be used. And so I think in our position, when we're working with people and helping people find out, well, I mean, this may be something that I'm good at, but is this really something that I'm passionate about? So, I mean, it's a difference between being good at something, but being passionate about something.
I don't imagine. I know it would be extremely difficult if you're just living your life and you're seeing, okay, I'm behaving and I'm going to continue this behavior based on the positive response I'm getting from all these people. They clap when I do this. Mm-hmm. They smile when I show up. I'm going to keep showing up. I'm going to keep running up and down the field, catching the ball and being talented. And it seems to work out because my bank account reflects that this is going really well. So I'm just going to suck it up, swallow my pride and pretend like I'm not feeling the things I'm feeling and just show up practicing for the games. But it's gotta be a complicated position to be in when your mental health is so unstable, but everybody else is telling you, no, you're doing a good job. You're doing what you're supposed to do. Just keep showing up, just keep showing up, you know, kind of nudging you along. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good point. I'm glad that you closed with that because the next question is, are you spending all of your time working towards the birth of someone else's dreams? So do you spend all day at work helping someone else's dream come true only to return home and not pursue your own dream? And I did that. I did that for 4 years. At least 4 years with a company. And this is a good company. This is a good company. And the people who own the company are good people. I've known them for several years and, you know, they did a lot for me and gave me a lot of opportunities. I'm very grateful for that, but it is my responsibility to take ownership of the fact that I was was dreaming of. And so I was giving everything. And some people are cool with this. Some people really are okay with this, which is fine. If you just want to be a part of something and you just want to get a paycheck and then you want to enjoy your free time going on trips with your family and being a t-ball coach or a basketball coach and your free time for your kids, that's cool. I think a lot of people, their dream is to be a parent and to be a husband or a wife. And I really don't think there's anything wrong with that if that's you. But I think we should all at least ask ourselves that question. Are we spending all of our life and giving all of this effort at least 40 plus hours a week for someone else's dream? And I got to that point to where when I felt exhausted and I asked myself, is it worth it? I started to say, no, it's not, because I still had dreams and I still had a vision and I felt like I had a calling and I wasn't giving it any time or attention. You know, have you ever felt that way?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Ever since I moved to Texas, I got blessed to move to Texas and I've been in the mental health and the giving field. And it was just like when you see things and you hear things and you see people that are in these professional positions to help, because I've been blessed to work in the school system and in the healthcare system. So different capacities, but seeing the same results, you're a number. And it's like the children and the patients and the clients, their needs are being neglected. And it's like, yeah. How do you direct someone in a direction to where they can really start to connect to themselves, because that's really where it starts. Like, say, I was just like, well, no matter what I say, no matter what I do, I'm impacting the people that I'm there for, but I'm not impacting the people that need to make change, that can make change at the top. You see what I'm saying? So you kind of understand where I'm going with that, where you can't, I mean, I'm impacting the people in the trenches, the students, the patients, the clients. But the people at the top that make the difference and make the changes within that environment are the people that was not being impacted, because all they focused on, like you said earlier, was the profit. And so right. for me, that motivated me to get out there and start, you know, next level focus, because now I can do things the right way, and I can do things because I knew it's the right thing to do, and it's not profit driven.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times those, what do you call them? Those procedures and the policy position. And I'm preaching to the choir here, but I'm just saying it for the sake of the listener. You get stuck in a position where you know the right thing that should be done, and you know exactly what you want to do, need to do, and should do, but policy says otherwise. Policy says no. The road ends here, and you stop here. And whether that means client is neglected, patient is neglected, is irrelevant, because policy states this, and policy is policy. Mm-hmm. We won't go off into this topic, but I think that comes with it's a lot of the problems with the private prisons, you know, prisons that are privately owned, and with privately owned treatment centers. They can be a really good thing, or they can be a charge, I think.
Sure.
But yeah, it does make things difficult. Especially when you're helping people, under the restriction of someone else's rules, it seems a little weird, because it seems like if we're helping people, and if our whole company, if our plan is to help people, shouldn't we all be involved? Or shouldn't all of us get together and have the same vision? But hierarchy mm-hmm. and things of that nature, it's just not the way it works. But anyway,
we don't want the listeners to think that we're bashing these places, because these places mm-hmm. are for the good. I mean, they do provide good resources and services and things of that nature. It's Absolutely. Just when we personally have a mission, and a mission not fulfilled, our personal mission is not being fulfilled, then that's when we, you know, have to say, hey, it's time for me to take a time out, time for me to step out, and let me start feeding the things that I know that I would love to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a reason for all these policies and procedures. There's a reason that people who work inside the company just don't have the freedom to do whatever they want. Right. You can't run a hospital that way. You can't run a treatment center that way. It just doesn't work. But yeah, like you said, today we're talking about people like you and I who have this this trailblazer inclination. We have this streak in us that's God-given that says there's no limit, and there's something more here, and there's a purpose here, and we can do more. So for people like us, it's really hard to work under all that structure. And inside this clearly defined path of here's what you can do and everything else is none of your business, it makes it really difficult to operate that way. Mm-hmm. So talking about all these things, a question I always have to ask myself is, what am I doing to experience further growth? What kinds of things am I doing to continue my education? And how am I investing in my future? How am I investing in becoming a better me? When I ask you that question, what does that make you think of?
Makes me really think of the journey that I've traveled and continuing to travel. Invested a lot, man. Education, you know, went ahead and, like you said, got up to 2 different master's degrees. Wealth of experience, you know, like I said, working in the mental health hospital, rock center, methadone clinic. And so I think, it's like being in the military, man, well traveled, right?
Yeah.
And then having the blessing and the privilege of connecting with guys like yourself and Mr. Bruce, and still keeping those, polishing those skill sets, because knowing, like you say, we're on a mission to do something here pretty soon, and you got to make sure that your skills are polished. We're doing a lot of reading and researching and things like that. So yeah, man, you got to stay on it. You know, it's easy to get in there, but it's hard as hell to maintain it. You got to maintain it.
And let me ask you this: when you were in, and I know some of the details of the places where you worked, when you were working in the mental health facility, mm-hmm. When you were working at the methadone clinic, when you're in that place, was it difficult for you to be motivated to seek more, or was being in a place like that motivation in itself to seek more?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, because that's a whole new world, man. A methadone clinic is actually a whole new world. I mean, that's something that I never, ever could imagine existing.
And will you explain for the viewers, if they don't know, what a methadone clinic is and why it is there?
Yeah. Well, a methadone clinic is a synthetic opioid, and it's used to kind of get people off of heroin. And so the methadone clinic is, they come there. It's usually open between 5 a.m. and 1 p.m. And so the people come there and they get their doses and they dose there and they go. And from the other side of it, that's called the dope house, because that's where people go and make deals.
Yeah.
So in that arena, it's like, wow, I mean, you're seeing all this stuff go on. And you're right, Mr. It is motivation within itself to say, how can you get somebody off this merry-go-round? Because I can imagine in their mind what goes on every day that they wake up. Their whole mindset is focused around, I've got to come and be here between these hours and these hours. I've got to have this methadone. I've got to do this, because it's just addictive. It's more addictive if you look it up. I mean, when I first worked at a methadone clinic, I looked it up. What is methadone? And the first sentence I read was that it's more addictive than the actual heroin itself. I shut the computer down and said, well, I better go out here and learn from these people. Let me tell you. So it is scary, man. Methadone clinics are very frightening and very scary scene. A lot of things going on at a methadone clinic.
Yeah. I have a lot of people who I've been very close with who that was their – it either is right now or has been a supervisor. I had an employee at one of the companies I worked for. I was supervising an individual, and they let me know because I had shared some things with them, because when we were doing the pre-employment screening, there was some stuff that came up on this person's background check. So I discussed it with them. I let them know what needed to happen and what I expected from them. And I shared some things about my past so they wouldn't feel alone and they wouldn't feel like I was attacking them. Mm-hmm. And they explained to me that they had to be there from every day. They had to be there at this time. We had an early shift that this person was applying for, and they would come in 30 minutes late for that shift because they had to go get their methadone. Mm-hmm. And, you trade one addiction for another, except your new addiction is sanctioned by the government. Mm-hmm. And so you have someone who runs everything else in your life in a way. You know, the government tells you what you can and can't do for the most part. Mm-hmm. And then now they're telling you that this addiction, your new addiction, is okay because it's under our geese. So we'll issue your substance, and we'll make sure you have what you need. Granted that you show up on time and you stand in line in the freezing cold rain, and we'll give you your fix, and then you can go back to your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was motivation within itself, man. I mean, like you say, you know, just seeing that, man, just seeing, you know, people just being compromised and people just being in a situation where I'm helpless. And if I don't get this, I can't make it. And it's like, wow, man, that's a powerful thing, man. That drug and that mindset is powerful. When you say to yourself, I know that I can't make it unless I have this.
Mm.
You know, unless I have this, unless I have this methadone, unless I have this crack, unless I have this heroin or this marijuana, whatever it may be, whatever you deal, see is sex, gambling, doesn't matter. And to see the power of how the whatever your DOC is has over you, like you say, man, that's your slave master. You actually living on a plantation.
Hmm.
And to be in a situation for us to be in a position, man, to take you away from that that plantation and elevate you to your platform, man, that's motivation, brother. That's motivation. And that's my motivation. Because I was on a plantation for a long time. As yourself, you know, we were on for a long time. and our slave masters was money. Man was money, women, you know, and it being a Lamanite realize, man, wow, man, these four corners, man. I'm addicted to these four corners and what goes on within these four corners. And sitting right next to a world that is producing and productive and healthy and provides you everything you need and everything you want in a productive and positive way, but was too scared to step through the door and just say, hey, let me drive over one more street. Let me go eat at a restaurant two blocks away from where I'm at. So, you know, so that's my motivation, man. And I know everybody has their level of motivation, but I know it's all connected in this profession.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. And I think, you know, there are some situations where I think we learn the most, and you can only truly understand when you've been there. And one of those is being a slave to something of your choosing. Mm-hmm. You know, we chose that. And then the other is to go without, to not have. And I think we learn a lot. And because those two places I've learned the most in my life, when I chose to become a slave to substances and that lifestyle, and then going without, having nothing, not having freedom, not having anyone to support me, being all alone and having nothing and just being told, figure it out. You know, those two places in my life, I was forced into a position where I learned more than any other. We're going to transition into the next one because the next topic is our surroundings. We've got about 5 minutes left. So I want to talk about, we were going to talk about people and places. So we'll at least try to get people. I always need to ask myself, who am I surrounding myself with? Mm-hmm. Do the people in my circle align themselves with the same path I want for my life? So when I think people that you spend time with and that you call friends, you know, associates, but more so friends, you know, your circle, people you keep close to you, are they aligned with the same path that you feel like you're pursuing? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And the good thing is, Mr. Neil, they don't have to be going on the same path as far as in our profession.
Right.
Are you driven in your profession to be the best that you can be and making sure you pass those blessings with other folks? And the hard challenge is in our profession, and when we're trying to be successful, the hard thing is when you just have to cut people off, and you have to say, "Hey, we got to agree to disagree. Our paths are different. Our mindset is different, and we're going our goals in the way. Take a lot of numbers out of the Rolodex, man."
Yeah, I think that's an important thing for people to understand is that it's okay. And I made a video a couple weeks ago talking about exactly this. It's okay to outgrow people and to move on. It's not saying that, hey, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. It's not saying that, hey, I'm better than you. It's saying, hey, I love you. We're in different places. We're going different directions. We can love each other from a distance. I support you. I want to see you do well. Let me know how I can help you. But right now, I've got to go over here and do this. And that's it. That's really it. Mm-hmm. But people make this. I see people do a couple of different things. I see people feel obligated. This is one of my first struggles. I feel like I'm abandoning someone. Mm-hmm. Or I feel like I owe somebody kindness or something. I don't know. I think I was always a people pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I wanted people to feel better because I know how to make people feel better. Mm-hmm. So I almost felt like I had to do it.
Yeah.
I almost felt like if I'm not making this person feel okay, who's going to do it? But then I'm playing God. And so I've got to remember that sometimes it's best for me to keep my eyes on the prize and focus on where God wants me to go. Mm-hmm. Stick to that path and let them be on their respective path. I'm glad you said that because I think a lot of us struggle with the leaving some people behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a difficult thing to do. It has to be done. Hand-picked. Sometimes we end up with a group of friends that fell into place. Neighborhood friends, school friends, teammates, which can be good or bad. If you come from a good neighborhood or you play on a really good team, that could be a good or a bad thing. Is your circle made up with people that you chose, or do you feel like the people in your circle just landed there?
Yeah, I believe, and for me personally, I believe God placed them there, you know, because again, I struggled a lot with letting people go. I struggled a lot. So I just started praying and asking God, man, I need some different thinking people. I need some people that are doing some things, setting different examples, different attitudes, different conversations. And I just need to be connected to those people. And so I've been blessed with, like I say again, I've been blessed with you, my man. I've been blessed with Bruce Cameron and some other people. I didn't select them, but God placed them there.
Yeah, and I think the way you said it makes more sense. I would say that God certainly placed people in my life. I will say that my part in that is pursuing what I think God would have me do. And when I do that, I think God does for us what we can't do for ourselves, just find the right people that we need to be around. And it's funny how that all comes together. It's funny in a cool way.
Yeah.
Sherrod, thank you for being with me today. You want to share with our listeners and viewers where they can find you and how they can get in touch with you?
Oh, yes, sir. Y'all can reach me at www.nlfmtexas.org. That's Next Level Focus Mentoring. Texas.org.
Thank you, Sherrod. And you can find the Concierge Coaches at Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. And you can find me at ElevatedLifestyleAcademy.com and Elevated Lifestyle Academy on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. We appreciate you guys, and we will see you next week.
All right. Have a good one.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.